The question was asked, we have a mitzvah eishes yifas toar, and how do we understand when the Torah concedes to our yetzer hara or not? The Torah says when a man goes to war, so at the time of war, one of the customs in ancient times was that when a country saw that they were losing, the women would get all dressed up and they would try to lure a man to take them, because their hope was, instead of being captured, they could marry one of the soldiers from the winning army and then they'd have a life of luxury. So this was a common practice in the time of the Torah onward for many centuries, maybe a millennium even after, where the women would come out and try to lure a man to marry them. And the Torah says that if a person goes to war and he sees a woman and he's taken by her and he really wants to, so then the Torah says, okay, you want to marry her? I'm not going to tell you no. I'm going to tell you, bring her home. You can't behave like an animal. You can't go and be with her out in the field. Bring her home. Explain to her what it means to be a Jewish woman. Explain to her what her obligations are going to be. If she agrees to do it, then she has to shave her head, and you give her 1 month to mourn the family that she's lost and everything like that, and then you could marry her. But, says the Torah, I know that at a time of war, you're going to be very taken. She's going to be very alluring. So if she's trying to seduce you and you want to take her as a wife, so you're allowed to sleep with her one time. She's going to try to be seductive. You're going to want to give in. Torah says, I'm not going to stand in your way. I know it's not going to work. So you can sleep with her one time. But after that, you have to do this whole procession. And if you've changed your mind and decided that you don't want to marry her, now that she's not all dressed up and now that she's shaved her hair and you've seen her real personality for a month, the Torah says, I don't really recommend marrying her, because she's not really interested in Judaism. She's only doing this as a way of moving up the ladder in society, and it's not going to be such a good situation in the house if you do marry her. So if you change your mind after that first time and you decide that, forget it, we're done, you can't use her as a prisoner of war. You set her free and let her go live a respectful life, because you can't forget the fact that you were intimate with her once. You have to treat her respectfully. You can't turn around and say, sorry, now I'm going to sell you or something else. So that's the mitzvah in the Torah. So we find an exception here. The Torah comes along and says, I know you're not going to be able to stand up to this. I'm going to let you go with her once. And after that, you'll rethink it. Now, psychologically, it makes a lot of sense. After they were together once, he can calm down. The Torah says, now, you don't marry her out in the field. You bring her back home. You give her time to settle down. She's going to think about what she's lost and the type of lifestyle she's about to adopt. And she's going to weep over her loss. Let her weep. She lost her family. And after a month, you'll rethink it. What's going to happen during that month? You walk into the house, you see her, she's not all dressed up, she's crying, she's shaved her head. Now you see the real person, she sits in the house crying. You give her a month to think about the pagan ways she's going to lose. No more Thanksgiving or whatever, Halloween or whatever it is, you're Jewish holidays. So she's going to sit there and she's going to let her weep. She has to realize the loss. Don't ignore it. Don't just come in and say, yeah, you're Jewish, it's great, it's the best way of life. You're going to see, you're going to love it. You're right, that's what you want to do, says the Torah. No, you got to be human to her. And what's going to happen is during that month, you're going to have time to actually communicate, understand what type of human being she is, and then you'll take control of yourself and say, this is not the right partner for life. We don't even talk the same language. I don't even know if she's going to educate my kids to Halloween. She's going to say, I know we don't do Halloween here, but let me just tell you about this amazing holiday we had back home. You know, it's not going to work out well. Your kids are going to end up messed up. So the Torah says, I don't recommend it. And I hope during this month you'll wisen up. But I'm not standing in your way. I'm going to let you do it this way. So what he's asking is, how come when it comes to other mitzvos, the Torah says, this is prohibited. Don't do it. Eat kosher. The Torah doesn't say, take one bite and then sit down and have a month with the pig in your house. And then you'll be convinced that you don't want to eat pork. The Torah doesn't say that. It just says you can't eat pork. Okay, so the question is a very good question. Why did the Torah over here tell us differently? Okay, so whenever we ask a why question, I don't know why God said something, but we can try to understand what the Torah is teaching us. I can't sign on this is why the Torah says it, but we can discuss what do we learn from it. Let's begin with an example, okay? There's a parent who doesn't let his kids drink Coca-Cola. He knows that there are ingredients in the soda that make the kids hyper. And you'll see some kids are like this. When they drink soda, they get giddy. You sit next to them and they can't even sit still. They're just jumping around. They become Jack in the Box. So there's a parent who tells his kids, you know, soda's a no for you guys. Then a kid gets up in the middle of the night and they have some kind of stomach virus and they're vomiting their head off. So the parent takes some Coca-Cola and he takes the fizz out, shakes it around the cup for a minute or two, and then he lets the kid drink it because Coca-Cola helps stop vomiting. So the kid looks at the parent and said, I thought you said I can't drink Coca-Cola. So the parent says, right, ordinarily Coca-Cola is not good for you, but if you're vomiting, so it's going to help you stop, it's going to help you feel better, so of course you can have it. What does the kid learn? He learns to understand that, wow, my parents are always thinking about what's good for me. And even though all along they wouldn't let me have Coke and all my friends were having Coke, okay, I understand. They're doing what's good for me. I might not like it, but I can understand it. The Torah tells us that at a time of war, you're in the middle of the battlefield, you walk into a house, you're being shot at, and you're hungry. And there's bacon on the stove. The Torah says, help yourself, enjoy. Ah, so you're allowed to eat non-kosher. No, you're not allowed to eat non-kosher, but during a time of war, you're allowed to. So you're running through a battlefield and suddenly you see some non-kosher squirrel or whatever and you're ravenous and you have nothing left. You're going to hack off its head, skin it, roast it, eat it, but it's not kosher for you. It's kosher. You're in the middle of war. The Torah doesn't say you have to eat kosher. The Torah says at a time of war, it's mutter. It says the Jews, during the first 7 years they entered the land of Israel, they were fighting to conquer the land, they were eating kadle chazire. They were eating, there's, I guess, a special part of the pork, which is the walls of its stomach, I guess, some kind of walls within the pig, that the Gemara says that's the most delicious food there is. So that's what they were eating for 7 years as they were conquering the land of Israel. What? I don't know, I never ate pork. I have no idea which part of the pork that is. But coming back to here, so the Torah, when the Torah tells us, in this little area, I know you've been away from your family for who knows how long. You've been away from everything Jewish. You've been out on the battlefield. Imagine war in those days. It wasn't you standing, aiming your gun, taking a shot, and move forward. When they killed someone, you're talking about sticking a knife up their belly. You're not talking about something so easy. You felt his guts coming out. You heard him. You heard the death throes. You know, and the Chazal say King David wouldn't let his hand rest before he killed 800 men. You know what it means to kill 800 men with your own hands? And, it's a pretty amazing thing. I have a friend who was walking through the Jewish quarter, and a young Arab came to him and stabbed him. And he carries a gun on him. He grabbed the guy by the neck, pulled out his gun, and kept trying to switch, but he couldn't, as he was wrestling the guy, he couldn't switch the safety thing down. And he keeps trying to pull the safety latch down, and he can't. Now this guy already stabbed him. Not he might stab him, he stabbed him once. And he can't pull the safety down, and then finally, whatever, the guy wrestled his way away and ran away. And he tells me till today, he says, you know, so I never killed someone. You know, he says to me, I'm a Kohen, I could do Birchos Kohanim, and I got nothing to worry about. He says to me, if I would have killed him, I would have still done Birchos Kohanim, because it was in self-defense. It's a guy that's trying to kill me. But he still has an element of, he feels good that he didn't kill someone. Now, you have to understand, I heard this story after his son was murdered. It's not just that he was stabbed, his son was murdered here in Merkaz Arav. And he tells me, you know, I didn't kill a human being. There's an element where it's very hard to kill someone. And that's with a gun, after the guy stabbed him. So, these people are out of war. It's real war. It's killing people with your own hands. It's not just with a gun. It's real life and death. And they're away from home. And after they've been away this whole long time, they can finally rest. They're reaching victory. And a woman comes out dressed up, and she says, hey, mister, why don't we Why don't we make out? And she's talking to him, and she's interested. The Torah says, okay, I don't recommend it, but I'm not going to tell you no. What does the Torah teach me here? It's like the parent who gives the kid a little bit of Coke when the kid's sick. So the kid says, oh, so all this time you told me no, obviously you were doing what was good for me, because you know what's right. So then the Torah tells you, okay, so then if I told you the rest of the time it's prohibited, then obviously the rest of the time you have no problem standing up to it. It's going to be tough. No one's saying it's easy to eat kosher. No one's saying it's easy to be in a university out in Louisiana and then say, I'm only dating Jewish girls. That's not easy, but it's doable. It's not a time of war. It's not a person having gone through what they've gone through. So the Torah, when the Torah reveals to us this one point where the Torah says, okay, I know you can't hack it, so now I'm going to let you do it once, and here's how to do it. I don't recommend it, but I'm not going to stand in your way. The Torah is revealing to me that every other time the Torah told me no, it was with a full understanding that I could really do it.